the commercials for insurance that locks your title and protects your house. But is it really worth it? Hi, I'm Rob West. Just the words home title fraud are enough to cause concern for many homeowners. And there are several insurance products on the market that claim to provide protection. But do they? I'll talk about that today. We're off, so please hold your phone calls. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Okay, we've talked about this before, but we've been getting a lot of calls about it lately, so it's probably time to revisit the idea of title fraud insurance. The idea behind it is that you're minding your own business one day and you get a call or letter saying that a lender is about to foreclose on your home for non-payment of a loan you didn't take out. You think, how could this happen? Well, an identity thief simply strolled into your county deeds office, faked your signature on a quitclaim deed, and transferred ownership of your home to someone else. The thief then took out a home equity loan or refinanced with cash out and skipped town. After a few months of non-payment, the lender is now looking to foreclose on you. Now, as I said, many companies are claiming their insurance can protect you from this type of fraud. But what exactly are you buying with title fraud insurance, which, by the way, usually costs around $15 a month? Well, first, you have to understand what you're not buying. This isn't what's typically known as title insurance, which you should always get when you purchase a property. It protects you against any claim involving the validity of your ownership of the property, and it's a one-time purchase, usually several hundred dollars. Title fraud insurance, on the other hand, what we're talking about today, is a completely different product. It isn't really insurance at all. It doesn't lock your title, and it won't protect you if a scammer forges your signature and transfers your title. These products will usually just monitor whether your deed has been transferred out of your name at the county records office. Now, that might be helpful if you're able to react in time and challenge the deed transfer at the records office before the scammer takes out a new loan, so it's on you to act. Also, there's no way to actually lock a title in any state. There's nothing to stop a scammer from forging your signature and transferring a deed out of your name. But the good news is you can monitor whether a fraudulent transfer has occurred all by yourself. Most counties now allow you to view the status of your deed online, and some counties even allow you to sign up for automated alerts involving deed changes. But again, if you don't challenge a fraudulent deed transfer in time, a thief can still take out loans against the property. Okay, but there's more good news. In theory, at least, you don't really need protection against this type of fraud. If someone forges your signature, transfers your deed, and then takes out a loan against the property, it's still fraud. The con artist didn't legally own your property, so the lender doesn't have a legal claim to it as collateral. If the lender tries to foreclose on you, it would be wrongful foreclosure and wouldn't hold up in court. Plus, the lender almost certainly required the scammer to buy lender's title insurance at closing, protecting them against loss. So the lender would be covered and might not even take you to court. And one more bit of good news? Possibly. Take out your title insurance documents from when you purchased the property. Look to see what it covers and doesn't. It will always protect you from legal claims against your ownership, but not necessarily against fraud. If it doesn't, you can purchase a title insurance policy that protects against fraud, even if you bought the property years ago. Now, I realize that all of this can be a bit confusing, so let's review. I mentioned lender's title insurance earlier. You usually have to pay for that whenever you finance the purchase of a property, but it protects only the lender. That's why I said it's important that you get owner's title insurance when you buy a home to protect you. It not only protects you from legal claims against your property, it will also cover any fees involved with defending your ownership. In most cases, the title company will actually provide an attorney to represent you. So the bottom line is, title insurance, always a good idea. Title fraud insurance, probably not worth the money. All right, I hope we cleared that up. As I said, we're off today, so don't call in, but we've got some great calls lined up in advance, so we'll go to those just around the corner. By the way, if you're a part of the MoneyWise family and you want to support this ministry, you can do that quickly and easily on our website at moneywise.org. Just click Give, and thanks in advance. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back. Stick around. We're delighted you're spending some time with us here at MoneyWise on American Family Radio, where we apply God's wisdom to your financial decisions. Phone lines aren't open today since this is a recorded program, but we have some great questions we think you will find helpful. Let me invite you to be a financial supporter of this ministry between now and the end of the year. In fact, as we press toward December 31st, meaning our financial goals here in December are going to be critical to us finishing the year strong and planning for our ministry activities next year. MoneyWise Media, this broadcast, and all that we do through the app and the web and through our coaches, it's all as a result of your listener support. We're a not-for-profit ministry, and we would invite you to become a supporter of this ministry if you consider yourself a part of the MoneyWise family. It's easy to do online at moneywise.org. Just click the Give button. Again, that's moneywise.org. Just click Give. You'll find ways to give online safely and securely. You'll also find ways that you can give through the mail or over the toll-free number that is provided by connecting with one of our team members. Thanks in advance for anything you can do to support this work. And again, moneywise.org, click the Give button is the easiest way to find all that you need. All right, we'll head to the phones today. The lines are filling up, so let's get started. Rolla, Missouri. Chase, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Hi, Rob. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
So my wife is 2 months pregnant. And
congratulations.
Thank you. I'm really nervous about paying for all of it. I have an HSA that has about $2,000 in it, but I'm wondering, yeah, you know, when we get those big hospital bills, should I just drain the account to pay for it? Or if I can pay it in a plan and then be able to pay with my contributions as I go, what would be the best strategy there?
Yeah, I mean, anything that's covered, you want to try to make sure that the insurance is kicking in. You, of course, have a high deductible health care plan. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So you would naturally want to submit all of your expenses to your health plan and then use the HSA funds for only those things that are not covered by insurance. The good news is that anything that's not covered by insurance, your HSA is eligible to be used for many of the expenses involved with a pregnancy and all of the expenses related to the birth of a child. All of those would be eligible. So you'd submit the bills, and then as expenses are then incurred back to you, then that would be the use for your HSA funds for whatever's there.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah. All right. Hey, congratulations, Chase, and all the best to you and your wife in this upcoming new season with the birth of your child. Thanks for your call today. 800-525-7000 to Tampa. Beverly, you're next on the program. Go right ahead. Beverly, are you with us?
Yes, sir. Yes, so I am in a bind. I'm a little confused what to do. So my question is, I wanted to pay off some debt, so I wanted to know if I should get a home equity loan or I should just sell the house that I live in and get something smaller and use whatever, you know, left over to help me pay off my debts. But with the housing market being the way it is and the high interest rate, I'm afraid. So I'm not sure what to do.
Yeah. And I'll just say right at the outset here, this is, Beverly, what we call a binary trap. And what that means is we put two options next to each other and we say, which one's better, this one or that one? And it may be a third. So let's look at the whole picture and see if we can find the best path forward for you. You mentioned your goal is to pay off some debt. Tell me about that debt. What do you have?
Well, the debt is a marriage settlement that I have to pay off for $75,000. So in order to able to get out of the marriage was that they had put on the table the other side that they wanted $100,000. Anyway, my lawyer was able to do whatever, try to fight as hard as we could. So we came down to $75,000, you know, include the closing costs of that loan if yeah, if it comes through. So I'd have to pay back that $75,000.
Okay, so this was essentially, the settlement was related to the equity in the home that became a benefit to your husband. Is that where the $75,000 came from?
It came from a marriage settlement. So I wanted to stay in the home because it was my retirement home that I'd bought and have it sitting there. So it was my forever home. So I wanted to stay in it. So I decided to buy the east part. So the settlement and the old divorce proceeding was 75.
I see. And do you have a mortgage on the property currently?
Yes, sir. I say roughly $200,000.
Okay, and what do you think the home is worth?
I'd say about $350,000.
About $350,000. And how many more years do you have on that $200,000 loan?
I would say I have another 10 years.
Another 10 years, okay. And so it's got a pretty attractive interest rate on it, probably?
Yeah, 2%.
2%. Wow. Yeah, that's phenomenal. Okay. The challenge is, it sounds like, well, let me ask before I weigh in. Do you have any other debts?
No, that's it.
Okay. The challenge is, I understand you wanted to keep it and your lawyer was able to negotiate a reduced amount. Basically, you're splitting the equity, it sounds like, in this home. And your portion of that is going to be $75,000 that you're sharing with your husband's or ex-husband so you can keep the home. The challenge is you don't have the financial resources to buy him out, which is the unfortunate part of this. Tell me about your budget. Do you have much left over at the end of the month after the bills are paid?
No, the budget that I'm on Social Security and I can't even pay my bills with that. I'm able to pay my mortgage to Social Security. I'm able to do that and pay, you know, just minor bills, you know, like my life insurance, you know, just stuff that really matters. But the important stuff but like utilities and food, I'm struggling with that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So buying your husband out of this $75,000 is really not an option, because you know if you were to take on a home equity loan, which I wouldn't recommend, or a line of credit, you'd have a very high interest rate on a $75,000 note. It would be you wouldn't qualify for it in the first place, and even if you did, you wouldn't be able to service the note. So I don't think that's an option. It sounds like really the only way to satisfy this obligation that you have through the divorce settlement is by a home sale. I'm just based on what I'm hearing about your budget, the assets that you have, and the fact that you're already kind of upside down in your monthly spending plan tells me that, you know, option one is really not even possible in terms of getting a loan on that. So that means we got to sell it, unfortunately, because I realize the whole objective here was for you to be able to hang on to it. And then at that point, I think, you know, clearly if you were to pull out, let's say $125,000 out of this after expenses, and you were to then take and pay off your husband out of that, you'd still have $50,000 you could put in the bank. And the idea would be probably that you'd want to start renting and then maybe convert that to an income stream or try to dial your expenses back so you can balance the budget at that point, and then either just continue to rent or look to buy something else down the road, perhaps get a part-time job to try to build up some savings. But at this point, getting a loan is not going to be an option. Stay on the line. We'll talk some more off the air, and we'll be right back.
This year has just flown by. I know, it's already December.
As 2022 comes to a close, the AFA Foundation would like to invite you to make a planned gift to American Family Association. Consider the many ways your planned gift can help restore a biblical worldview in our nation, as well as bring financial stability to your family. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit our website at afafoundation.net.
Thankful to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. We're taking your calls and questions as we apply the wisdom from God's Word to your financial decisions. Not so we can enrich ourselves and build bigger barns, but so that we can understand God's heart as it relates to money. We all manage money every day. And the question is, does it reflect our values and priorities? Are we using it in a way that advances the kingdom? Are we building our own mini kingdoms here on earth, or are we building God's kingdom with an eternal perspective, enjoying what God has given us, providing for our families, but also participating in God's activity through our giving and using money as a tool to accomplish His purposes? Well, that's the heart of the matter here at MoneyWise each day. And together we gather to answer questions and talk about how we can address the financial concerns we have each day, but using the wisdom from the Bible, not taking our cues from this world. All right, we've got some great questions stacked up here today, so let's make our way through next to Tennessee. Shelley, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Yes, I have three credit cards, and one I owe like $700 on at 10% interest. I have another one I owe $2,000 on and another one I owe $2,000 on. And I was wondering what would be your suggestion to pay those off quickly, yeah, or which one I should pay off first.
Sure. That's a great question, Shelley. The interest rates on the $2,000 cards, are they pretty high?
Yes, they are very high.
Okay, like north of 20%?
Yeah, they're 27, yeah, at least. Wow. 27.
Yeah, wow. Okay. And how much margin do you have at the end of the month after the bills are paid and the minimums on all these cards? Do you have anything left over?
No. Not usually, no.
Kind of right up to the edge. So you're basically just sending the minimum payments, correct?
Pretty much.
Okay. Do you think there's an opportunity to cut back spending, eliminate subscriptions, cut back on eating out, discretionary spending? I mean, have you taken a hard look at this budget to see if you could cut back on your spending and try to free up more that could be sent to the credit cards?
Yes, I could probably do that, eliminate my cable or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. And then do you have any kind of emergency savings right now?
No.
Okay. Well, here's where I would go with this. You're right at the threshold with $4,700 in debt, especially without much in the way of margin to send extra. You're really at a good place to use what is called debt management or credit counseling. Are you familiar with those terms?
Yes. I've heard of them. Yes.
Yeah, so anything over $4,000, it really makes sense, especially in a situation like this. I mean, if you said, listen, I've got, you know, $500 extra a month I can apply to these, you'd probably just want to do it yourself. We'd knock out that smallest balance first, even though it's the lowest interest rate, and then you'd just keep right going down the line until they're all paid off, and a year from now you'd be out of debt. But because you're kind of living paycheck to paycheck, that's where debt management really shines. So essentially, these accounts would be closed. They would be reduced. And you wouldn't have to put all three in. If you wanted to keep the one at 10% out, you could. But if you're comfortable closing them all, you'd put them into debt management. Through credit counseling, the interest rates are lowered, and that's really essential. And then you'd send one monthly payment direct to Christian Credit Counselors, our preferred nonprofit debt management company. They would then distribute a portion to each of the three, and a combination of that fixed level monthly payment plus the reduced interest rates will allow you to pay this off 80% faster. And you'll also have some encouragement, I think, Shelley, because right now you're probably sending these minimum payments and not seeing a whole lot in the way of these balances declining, which is frustrating. But when you start to see yourself making some progress through that monthly payment every month and you realize the balances are coming down, now all of a sudden you can see the light at the end of the tunnel and feel like, okay, I can see how I can be out of debt over time. And I think that's really going to be the best solution for you. The other thing that they'll do is work with you on your spending plan to look for areas to cut back, because I'd also like for you to build up an emergency fund of somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500. It might take several months to do it, but that's going to be key, because when the unexpected comes, and it will, Shelley, I don't want you to have to rely on credit cards anymore. I want you to have some money and savings ready to go to be able to cover that. Let's break the cycle. And then once we get you out of debt, then we'll build that up to 3 to 6 months expenses. And now all of a sudden we're starting to take this extra money every month and putting it into a retirement account or something else that, you know, is positive, that's building your net worth, you know, that you can use down the road. How does that sound?
That sounds pretty good.
Okay, so what I would do is reach out.
I have another quick question. If I got like a part-time job or something, what would you suggest, if I could do that, what would you suggest in that area, which one should I work on first?
Which card?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. If you had a lot of extra income, you didn't want to go through debt management, as much as it might surprise you, I'd say let's knock out the $700 first. And the reason is that's going to give you the motivation to keep going. If the balances are roughly the same on the next two, they're both right at 2,000, then I'd choose the one with the highest interest rate to go after second. And then once that one's gone, then put all the money, the minimums from the first two, plus all the surplus from your second job, I'd put that on the third, the third of the debts, the 2,000 with the lower interest rate.
Yes, because I have been offered a job, but I haven't accepted it yet because of the situation that I'm having to deal with my parents right now. So
I see.
But, I could.
Now, keep in mind, if you decided to go through debt management, you can accelerate these payments at any time. So you could go and get the interest rates down, start sending a level monthly payment, and then if you decided to take the job and you got an extra $200 or $500 a month, you'd send it on, and they'd send it right on to the creditors and get those balances reduced. So that would still be an option through debt management, but at the end of the day, you need to do what's going to work for you. I just want you to get this paid off as quick as you can. If you want to pursue the debt management option, you can find our friends at ChristianCreditCounselors.org. They've worked with hundreds of our MoneyWise listeners, and the testimonies are incredible because they're believers. They know what they're doing. They're good at it. And this is my preferred way to get out of credit card debt when you have at least $4,000 or more. Again, ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Shelley, all the best to you in the days ahead. I'm confident you can do this. Just stay at it. And once you're out of debt once and for all, let's get that emergency fund up so we don't ever have to go back to using credit cards for any expenses that aren't budgeted and can't be paid off at the end of the month in full. God bless you. Once again, this is a recorded program, so phone lines are not open today. We'll be right back with more MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio as we apply biblical wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. Today's program is pre-recorded, so phone lines are not open. Have you downloaded and tried the MoneyWise app yet? If not, you're missing out, especially now when it's harder than ever to stay on budget and make sure that where our dollars are going actually reflect what's most important to us. Larry Burkett's tried and true envelope system has worked for decades. We took it and made a modern, beautiful expression of it in a digital form in the palm of your hand. It's called the MoneyWise app, and alongside it, you'll find our community where you can post questions and get responses from others on the stewardship journey. Also, our Learn tab, where you can find the best content in Christian finance. It's all in the MoneyWise app in your app store. Check it out today on our website at moneywise.org. Click app, or just head to your app store, wherever you download them, and search for MoneyWise Biblical Finance. All right, back to the phones we go to Miami, Florida. Hey, Jim, how can I help you, sir?
Yes. I just had a quick question. I'm getting ready to get a large settlement due to a injury that I had about 4 years ago. It's roughly around $600K. I'm 36 years old, and I have about $130 in debt. That's including mortgage, car notes, and I don't know where to go from here. I do have a financial advisor lined up, but I need more information.
Okay. Well, what are you sensing? What do you think you want to do moving forward? And what are your main questions at this point?
Well, I mean, I'm disabled, but I chose to continue working. But I want to build a little bit for my, I have two daughters, so I want to build a little bit for them and just pay off my debt and then just live modestly. I, go from there.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think you're on the right track here. I love the idea that you're not trying to raise your lifestyle as a result of receiving this large payout as a relatively young guy with a family. I think the key is, yeah, let's use it for productive purposes, which in my mind is absolutely let's pay down or eliminate debt. That's always a good idea. That's going to free up quite a bit of margin every month and allow you to have a lot more flexibility because you're completely unencumbered. And then let's put it to work. Let's also not forget opportunities for giving as well. Now, I'm delighted to hear that even though this is a result of being disabled, you are able to continue to work. That's great. You know, I'm delighted to hear that. So I think the key is, number one, doing some financial planning. And I would encourage you to use an advisor who shares your values, who understands kind of your what is most important to you as a believer so that you can consider giving opportunities, but also what this means for your long-term savings and investing. You're going to want to make sure you handle the tax side of this. You'll want to be wise in eliminating that debt. And then the key from that point forward is to say, how should we invest this? How much risk do we want to take? What is our time horizon? Do we want to take a portion of this and carve it out for college and maybe put it into a 529 plan? Or do we want to put it all in longer-term investments for the future? And then, you know, as a part of that planning, defining enough. Because given the fact that you're a young guy, you've already, on your way to saving for retirement, now you'll be debt-free and you'll have this kind of big lump sum coming your way. The question is, how much is enough? And, you know, what are you ultimately trying to accumulate? And at what point will you be done saving so that you are free to give more away? Because it's not about the mindless accumulation of wealth. It's about accumulating wealth for a purpose. And that's in light of our values and priorities and our time on our knees, you know, before the Lord, asking him what he's called us to in this life. So I think you're on the right track here, and I would really, you know, find that advisor, perhaps the one you've already selected, that can help you work through all of this, both from a financial planning standpoint and then ultimately an investment management standpoint, so that this money is prudently invested based on your goals and objectives and a properly diversified portfolio, and then somebody who's not emotional, related to this money can make sure that that investment strategy is enacted over time, regardless of what the market does in the next 6 months or a year. Does all that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. It does. I just wanted to have a little bit of guidance, and I think you've given it to me.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. If you want to consider another advisor or two before you make that final decision, you can head to our website, moneywise.org, and connect with some certified Kingdom advisors there in Miami. If you've already made that decision, that's great. I think getting some wise counsel, Jim, given the changes that are taking place and the significance of the money that's coming your way, is very prudent and wise on your part. And so I would follow that through. And listen, all the best to you. I hope you continue to recover, my friend. And we appreciate you being a part of the program. To Michigan, Susan, you're next on the program. Go right ahead.
Hi, thanks for your taking my question. I have a sibling who has fallen apart in hard times. He has never been a good money manager, number one, but his wife passed away, and he came to learn that she put their mortgage on, forbearance and extended for a while.
Right.
And that note has come due. Evidently, their mortgage was sold to a broker, and the broker is telling them to pay like $10,000, and then they'll put that 6 months that's due on the back end of the loan. I just don't know if this is the right thing to do, because my sibling does not manage money very well at all. And he's not speaking to me directly. He's having this all dealt with his stepchildren. And I'm a little uncomfortable. Now, I have the money, but I don't know that doing this is going to be helpful. And the house is, the value is like $30,000 worth more than what they owe. And I suggested what you had, and I suggested maybe selling it and getting what he can and moving into an apartment, similar to what you suggested to an earlier caller.
Yes.
But he doesn't want to leave the house.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do I do?
Why is he not talking to you directly about this, Susan?
He doesn't know. He doesn't know. He keeps saying, well, his daughter-in-law or his stepdaughter knows all about it. And he doesn't know enough about it to speak about it.
Yeah. Well, those are all red flags to me. I mean, everything you've said is a red flag where you're throwing good money after bad in the sense that it's never a bad thing to help somebody in need. The problem is you're not really helping someone who mishandles money by giving them more. And sometimes we have to experience the consequences of our decisions to start making better ones. And the worst thing that can happen to your sibling in this case is foreclosure. And that's not the end of the world. People recover from that all the time, usually much wiser because they learn something from it. You've obviously got to consider your relationship as well. And you do need to think about that. You want to do whatever you're going to do in love with clear and open and honest communication. But I don't think the automatic response here is just to throw money in this situation because you have no reason to believe that money's not going to be eaten up in legal fees because he's not going to keep this current and all of a sudden it gets foreclosed on anyway, except now you've just thrown some money down the drain. So I think he needs to be willing to sit with you and talk about a plan and perhaps bring a third party in that can walk alongside you all. You can say, listen, I want to be a part of the solution, but only in the context of a plan with accountability that makes sense, because otherwise I'm not helping you or myself, and that doesn't honor the Lord. I'm going to take a quick break, Susan. If you'll hold, I'd love to get your thoughts right on the other side of this. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio as we apply biblical wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. Just before the break, we were talking to Susan. Susan has a sibling that is asking for some help to bail him out of a home that's upside down. It's been in forbearance. That money is now going to be applied to the back end. He's not really communicating with her. She feels uncomfortable about sharing these funds with him, despite her ability to help and her desire to do so if she knew that it was going to be used for productive purposes. But Susan, as I shared before the break, I think the key here is to recognize that you're not helping someone who mishandles money by giving them more. And oftentimes it's experiencing the consequences of these decisions that perhaps the Lord will use to get him on a better path. Also, the big red flag for me is that he's not even willing to communicate with you about this. He's going through other people in the family. But give me your thoughts on what I shared.
Your comments resonate with what I've been battling with inside. My only question is can he still sell the house outright if it's in foreclosure?
Well, he'd have to do, he's possible that he could get it out of foreclosure. He'd have to work with the lender. Keep in mind, they don't want to foreclose if they don't have to. So he could convert it to what's called a short sale, which is basically a recognition that there's going to be a deficiency balance left over at the end because the home is upside down. But they're going to want to maximize the amount they can get out of it. And if him selling it would help them to get more out of it, it's possible, depending upon what stage it's in, for this money to be pulled out of foreclosure, but he's going to have to immediately begin working with and communicating with the lender to see if they'd be willing to put this on the market and get it sold as a short sale. And that is an option, but he's going to have to, you know, move on that pretty quickly.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you.
All right, Susan, listen, you be praying about this because we'll ask the Lord to give you some wisdom here as you navigate this. We obviously want the relationship to come out stronger. We want him to, you know, perhaps have an encounter with the Lord as a result of this and as he sees his need and dependence for a Savior. And we also want him to get on a healthy financial track, and we'll just pray that the Lord uses you in that process. And I know it's not easy, so you hang in there. Thanks for your call today. Back to the phones we go to Rock Island, Illinois. Michael, you've been very patient, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the call. I appreciate the time. So I'm looking at, right now, my wife and I, we have $33,000 in savings. And we're looking at a property, an investment property close by, hopefully to buy from about $15,000 to about $20,000 top. My question is this is a potential for a rental, but also for a flip and sell. What's the best option here?
Yeah. Well,
You know, I think there's a couple of questions to be answered first. And the first is, so you guys would, you know, not drain your emergency savings, but let's say it's, you know, down to 10 to 13,000. What does your cash flow look like versus your expenses on a monthly basis? And what does that mean just in terms of your ability to build that back up and have some margin there?
Yeah, so right now we are paying all of our bills at about $2,400 a month. We get about $1,400 a month extra in income, so we're looking at about $1,400 every month. So that's why our savings has actually grown. We haven't touched it.
Okay.
Since that started happening.
And you think you could add more than $1,000 a month, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. And obviously, you know, our antennas go up anytime you say I'm going to buy a piece of property for $15,000 to $20,000. So tell me about that and how much you'd need to put it in it to get it to a place where you could rent it out.
Yeah. So basically this is a property that was bought on a tax sale from a private company. They usually make their money on taxes or on the interest rate. I take that back, yeah. The interest rate on it. And then they sell. Just had multiple conversations. We're looking at that price range basically because we're pretty sure that's what it's going to cost. In the end, I think if we can put some equity, sweat equity into it, turn it around, it's been unoccupied for about 3 years. But if we can put some sweat equity into it, turn it around, I think we're looking about $5,000 to $10,000, putting into it. If everything's working well, we're talking about if it still has a functioning AC, functioning HVAC, some of the other stuff I'm very well acquainted with in terms of making fixes myself. So that's a benefit there with a lot of sweat equity. So.
Yeah. I guess my only concern is, obviously when you buy these properties in this case on an auction, you're generally not able to inspect them before bidding. You typically need a pretty healthy cash reserve, which just to buy it, we'd be draining a good bit of that. And even though you have, $1,200 a month extra and you're going to do a lot of it yourself, I think you need to expect that it's going to need more work than you expected, given how long it's sat vacant, and it's going to take more time than you expected. Perhaps to get it to a place where it is viable as a rental, you could in effect drain your cash reserves, which just puts you in a bit of a difficult spot. I mean, if you're able to wait and buy another property down the road after you've, built these reserves up a little bit more, I would be more comfortable with that. If you did go ahead with it, obviously you just want to make sure that, you want to be a landlord and all that comes with that, both getting it to the place where it is able to be rented. And then beyond that, maintaining it, dealing with, the repairs that come along the way. And, right now, if you sell it within a year, it's going to be essentially taxed at the same rate as your ordinary income versus a long-term cap gain at 15%. Well, the delta between the two, you just have to ask, is it worth it for me to become a landlord, or would I be better off just flipping it and selling it and moving on to the next one rather than putting a lot of money in it, just given how much time goes into all of that, not to mention the time and effort in being a landlord. So I think you have some things to think about. I'd probably take the conservative route and punt on this and maybe get another one down the road, but some things to think about if you guys decide to proceed. Thanks for your call. To Indiana, hey, Karen, how can I help you? Go ahead.
Yes, I got to make up my mind with this whole life insurance policy. I'm 68 and I've had it since, I believe, 1985, and I've got a loan on of it around $6,000. But my cousin said that hers jumped so extremely high she couldn't even afford it. And I know when I turned 65, it doubled. I'm paying about $80 a month plus the interest once a year.
Okay.
So I don't know where to just dissolve the thing, and because it was going to be my death benefit to my girls to bury me and then have what's left.
Yes.
Since I only have Social Security and a part-time job.
I see. Are there other assets now, Karen, that could be used for funeral and burial expenses?
Only thing is I own a home clear, and I got to get things situated with that, too, into a will or whatever it takes. I have it did,
yes.
But I don't have any really much funds because okay. I didn't manage right with what okay. I did.
No
have.
Problem. Yeah, and how much cash value has built up in this policy? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I thought it just said around $2,000. I know okay. that's not very much.
Yeah,
or I'm not sure. I did see something around $10,000, but okay. I don't know.
Well, that would be your next step, because here's the thing. You're well past any penalty phase for surrendering this policy. And if you don't need the death benefit anymore because you don't need to, cover someone else who depends upon you for income, then you could surrender the policy and put that cash to better use, including just setting it aside for funeral and burial expenses. And then you'd do some pre-planning, not necessarily prepayments, but pre-planning for your expenses or for your funeral and burial, making those decisions for your daughters so they wouldn't have to at that time. And then you won't get hit with any kind of fees for surrender. You'd have to pay some taxes on the gains in the policy beyond your contribution, if there are any. So I think that might be a better option. And then you're not continuing to pay for this policy, for this death benefit, which is going to become increasingly expensive over time. And then you'd have the money available for the girls. And once you do that pre-planning and get that will in place, which you really need to do, so the state is not making the decisions on your distribution of your estate, but you are, then I think you'd be in a great spot and not continuing to pay for this expensive policy in the future. Thanks for your call, Karen. Quickly to Ohio, Paul, just another couple of minutes. How can I help you, sir?
Hi, quick question. I owe some money to the IRS for last year due to my wife filing when we separated, unfortunately. And long story short, we're back together. Everything's good. But because Great. She filed independent, I had to file as well independent. So yeah. I owe money because I couldn't write off my daughter. So I owe about $3,400, and I'm wondering how much time do I have, and should I just take care of this with a CPA, because I've tried contacting IRS, but it takes like 3.5 hours wait time, and I don't have that time, unfortunately.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you definitely want to get this taken care of. You're right that the IRS is just slammed right now. It's in part because of COVID and the backlog, all the tax incentives that were given out during COVID. They are just way behind on everything from refunds to just general customer service. You can work with the IRS to get this paid back either on a payment plan or in a lump sum, depending on what you have the ability to do. But I think this is a great example, Paul, of where you do want to get a CPA or enrolled agent who can represent you and really help you determine, first of all, what is actually owed just based on your filing status last year, and then help you work on either establishing that repayment plan or just getting that lump sum paid back. So excited to hear that the Lord has allowed you and your wife to reconcile, that you're staying together. That's God-honoring, and I know that pleases the Lord, and I'm delighted to hear it. God bless you, my friend. Thanks for calling today. Well, folks, that's going to do it for us. MoneyWise on American Family Radio is a partnership between American Family Radio and MoneyWise Media. Thanks so much to my team. I couldn't do it without them. Thank you for being here. Come back and join us tomorrow. We'll see you then.